Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of John Scott and Dropping the Gloves. Cody, you got me flustered because you're so handsome. My intro is just terrible. We got Cody Hodson joining the show here. My good buddy, played with him in Buffalo. I'm lucky enough to see him, three times a year, Cody, at some charity event where you grace me with your presence. But first of all, thank you for joining my show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Yeah, we always chat and have a great time at these alumni events and rehash old stories. So I'm happy to come on here. We can let the audience hear some of these.
Yeah, Cody was nice enough to give me $5. I asked for $5 in Buffalo for the valet because I don't have any money. And he goes, you know what? Take 10. You need it. And he gave me $10. And then I didn't give the valet any of it. I just took it. And I just threw $10 in my pocket. So thank you, Cody, for that. You were so nice. So generous.
Yeah. That was a fun night. Yeah. And then you asked for the money for the valet. And I know you just skipped out on that for sure. We knew that ahead of time. So
do you remember what you said to me? Do you remember what you said to me? I don't even know if I should repeat it. Because I was like, hey, I'll pay you back. Do you remember what your words to me were after that?
I think this is a fabricated thing. I don't think this is truthful.
He goes, I made like 40 mil on the show. She's like, I made 40 schmel on the show. I'm good for $10. You said something to that regard.
I didn't even make that.
But anyways, we don't have to dwell on that stuff.
Well, I guess everything's Googleable now. So.
Oh, I can find out how much you made right now.
Yeah.
But it's all relative with taxes in Vancouver. Let's move on to you, Cody, because the reason we're doing this interview, you know, I am interested in your story, and then, you know, things fall apart. You don't really follow up with guys and life happens, and then you forget. And then I'm scrolling through my social media and I go, holy Cody's bought a pickleball team. What the hell's going on? And then I text you right away and I said, pickleball ? What are we doing? So before we get into the hockey stuff, before anything else, what does a 35-year-old former first round NHL pick, superstar in juniors, international champion, multi-millionaire. What does he do in buying a pickleball team? Just walk us through how that happens.
I just thought it'd be a fun adventure. I got into pickleball like most people during the lockdown. So I was down in Nashville and just became this huge craze. And I thought it would be, you know me, I don't even drink. So to me, like the whole atmosphere was just a ton of fun to have people around. And I thought this would be a great spot. People could just have a beer and sit around and chat between games. So, that's kind of been the journey that I've been on the last couple of years, trying to find a venue. And I thought a great nexus would be this pickleball team. So in the Canadian Pickleball League, there's eight teams right now, Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, and I bought one of the teams from Southwest Ontario Brewers. I bought a team from Alex Kerfoot, actually, a former Leaf. And then my partner is TJ Brody. So
I got
to hang out with him and we trained together. Yeah, so it's got a big hockey connection as well. And one of the guys I played junior with, his dad is part owner as well. So it's a good group and they're right into it, right invested. So I thought this is a nice team to join.
So you travel to all these cities and play, it's a professional league.
Yeah, I'm not playing. I'm the owner, so I'm not nearly as good enough to play in this league. These guys are professionals.
And so you pay people. You pay people.
Yeah, I'm like I'm not in anywhere near that level of wealth, but I'm like the Terry and Kim of the pickleball team.
The Terry and Kim Pegula. Multi-billionaire owners from the Buffalo Sabres, you're now comparing yourselves to them. Okay. Whoa, Cody. Okay. He thinks highly of himself.
I'm not a player.
You're not a player, but you like being around it. Ambassador, exactly. Owner, kind of face of the franchise a little bit.
I think we can grow the game.
I'm just so fascinated by this. So do they play weekly? Do they play monthly? How does this work? Do you have a tournament where all the teams come every couple months? Because it's expensive to go to Vancouver, Montreal, from Toronto. Like, that's not cheap.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's more of a system. Like, a lot of the leagues started in the past. NHL was just a bunch of series of tournaments. So we have eight tournaments throughout the year, and we have a championship at the end. And then that kind of dictates the winner. And the winner gets, I think it's like $25,000. If you win the whole league. So It's not huge money, but it's
that's
a lot
of
of
money.
fun. I mean, the top pickleball players in the world get millions of dollars. Like Annalee Waters makes $2 million. So
shit, really?
We got a ways to go to be able to get, yeah, the players, that kind of money. But yeah, the teams in the U.S., like Mark Cuban's got a team, their valuations are $15 million. So that'd be good to get on the ground floor here in Canada and try
Dang.
To grow the league. And just, it's a fun thing to do. I enjoy playing. I enjoy being around it. And some of these athletes are pretty incredible to watch. So it's been fun.
It's only a matter of time before it's an Olympic sport, you would think.
Yeah, I think they're talking with the Olympic Committee now about possibly coming for next summer.
Well, if they did the stupid breakdancing last Olympics, you would think pickleball yeah. takes a little bit more effort than that.
There's actually a following for pickleball too.
Well, yeah, like
there's 178 million Indian pickleball players, just players in India. So just the scale of this, yeah, it's wild. I'm sure you've seen it too, where you grew up playing.
No, I have never played it once.
Taken over.
Never played it once.
Oh, really?
Once.
Well, we
never,
gotta get you. Yeah, you'd be good.
No.
Get the long reach.
My knees are just absolutely atrocious and shot. But yeah, let me know if you need me. I'll
That's
be
there. Nice part about pickleball. That's a nice part about pickleball, honestly. Like my first game, I got beat by somebody who was 70 years old. I was like, you know, I was hooked. I think I like to think of myself as a pretty good athlete, and I got beat. So I just spent the next 4 or 5 hours trying to get better, and it gets you addicted. You'll love it. You don't need to move that much, though. It takes a lot of the speed and agility out of the game because of the way the rules and the way the game is structured.
You think you're a good athlete?
So I used to be a good athlete.
Yeah. That was the one thing that surprised Cody when I played with him, but it was the lack of speed you had. It was incredible because typically with hockey players, you see them and they're moving, everything's moving so fast and they're flying around the ice. Cody, his legs would move, but he would almost go slower. It was an amazing skill to put that much effort into not a lot of, you know, output, you know, cause you know, work, force, act, like it's all an equation. And I was always fascinated by how little output you would get from so much work going in there. How did you do that?
I appreciate that, John. I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not, but
no, it's not. It's definitely not.
I obviously worked a lot on trying to get my skating efficiency better, but I think I figured it out my last year actually in Milwaukee. After 8 years off, I found a skating coach that could help me translate the power into actual speed on the ice. So
well,
it's just a little bit too late.
No, let's transition into that because I'm obviously joking. You're an incredible athlete, first rounder. You had a great NHL career, but you have an interesting story, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but I think it's important to talk about because I didn't really realize all of your medical issues too. Because when people part ways, you just kind of lose touch. You go along your hockey career. I was dealing with my stuff. And then you look back and you go, man, like Cody was going through some stuff. So you were diagnosed with this RYR1 muscle
Yep.
disease. And have you had that your whole life, undiagnosed?
Yeah. No, it's a genetic disorder. Had it since I was a kid. But traditionally, everyone knows it as an allergy to anesthesia. So if I was to get, have surgery, you have to go under... They put you to sleep with this general anesthesia, and that's what I'm allergic to. Your body reacts to it. Your muscles all tighten, tense up. Your body overheats, and then your liver, kidney, lungs, everything just shuts down from there. So it's malignant, meaning it can kill you, and then hyperthermia means you just get too hot. So we discovered recently that doctors have known this for a while, but I think it's not as popular. Not many people know about it, but other things can trigger that, and they basically. Job description for an NHL hockey player. It's going from hot to cold to hot, high heat.
Okay.
They told me basically I was diagnosed with malignant hypothermia. I'm supposed to avoid contact sports, high pressure stress situation, caffeine, alcohol, hot to cold to hot. And then basically just exertional force for long periods of time. So, basically put an end to my career pretty quickly. And so, yeah, I was having some difficulties my last year. You know, I was my lungs were shutting off. I couldn't breathe. I had to go to the hospital a couple times on my own. And they set you up, blood pressure would drop. And I was having kidney and liver problems and trying to filter that out. So I was like, you know, urinating blood, that kind of stuff. And no one really knew what was going on. So thankfully, got hooked up with the right doctors in Toronto. And they told me this is what I have, basically textbook case of MH. And then, so I had to stop playing.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was the end of my career. But I was having a ton of injuries even before that. Like I was, kept tearing muscles all the time and didn't know why. And, two in my upper neck and back, and I had a tough time turning. So it was difficult there for the last couple of years for sure.
And then was symptoms from when you were a little kid, right? Because you're obviously, as a little kid, all you do is run around. Like that said, obviously it's not high stress, but you're exerting yourself. You're going from cold to hot. Did you, looking back now, like obviously hindsight's 20/20, you go, man, when I was, growing up, that explains a lot of things where I was kept getting hurt or this and that. Did that happen?
Yeah, no, I look at it like I was very fortunate to play 6 years in the NHL and then, later on after that. So, I mean, if I was told I had malignant epidermoid as a kid, they would have not allowed me to play contact sports. So I wouldn't be able to play anything. So the way I look at it, I got an extra bonus years to play and enjoy and do what I love to do. So, a lot of guys said, I would be devastating to have taken away. And sure, like that's your whole life. That's what you grew up doing, wanting to do. But the way I look at it is just a blessing to have that time, to be honest.
Man, the outlook you have is pretty impressive. Most people would have just been super depressed, but you obviously use that time appropriately.
That's part of maybe my coping mechanism with it too, maybe. I feel like that's the way I have to look at it. Otherwise, I'd get super depressed.
But, yeah, because
I'm happy with it. I got a good life now, and I'm happy to do other things, but I'm glad I came back and tried to, because I think that was a big part of getting over it too, was knowing that I can control it. I met Wim Hof, and I was kind of randomly, basically given this thing on the internet showing me how to, try to breathe and get into this cold tub, because I wanted to be, everyone was doing these cold tubs, and I knew that I would die if I got in the cold. So trying to figure out ways to get in the cold without triggering this disorder.
Wow.
So I found this Wim Hof breathing, and then that helped me even more. And then, I still love the game. So I didn't touch my gear when I retired for 5 years. Like I sat in a closet. And then JP Dumont, another, Nashville alumni and Sabres alumni, I said, why don't you come out and play? And who cares? No one, it's not like men's league where, guys are trying to kill you. They're trying to prove that they should have played in the NHL. And it's all other ex-NHL guys. We just have a good time. And if you can't play, you can't play. No one's going to force you to try to be out there.
Yeah.
So I came out and I loved it. It was a good pace. And then when I was playing a little more, I started doing some more of these little ice baths and the breathing stuff. And I just felt my body start loosening up, and I didn't need any of the medication that was, would cause me to be loopy and drowsy to even just play shinny or men's league or do a workout. So I just got on less and less. And then I was back home in Toronto, and I was skating with some guys that were pretty decent, and I was doing pretty well. And then I called up some buddies that were still playing. I said, hey, if you ever need an extra guy, you got 19 guys, you need 20. Like I'm happy to jump in to play shinny rather than get some guy off the street or something. So anyway, the guys called me next week, and I was playing with a bunch of guys that were still making a ton of money in the NHL, and I did pretty well. So
thought,
this is a lot of fun. It's nice to be back out here around the guys. And same thing the next week. And then I had one of my former coaches watch. He was just in the arena. He said, Cody, you got to come back, or at least you got to come try at least. So he said, I'll train you for free. We'll work together every month. So I trained for 6 months trying to get this thing to trigger, and I couldn't trigger it. And then, I started calling teams, and that was a little bit awkward at the beginning, trying to advocate for yourself after 8 years. So I called my agent, Claude Lemieux. I said, listen, I'm not going to ask you to try to ask for teams on my behalf. I don't want to embarrass you like that.
Yeah. But
just want to give you an update on what's going on. And I called the doctors that told me, I shouldn't play, that told me it would kill me. So I had them do run tests on me every day training, and seeing if the level it shows. When you trigger this thing, it basically shows up in your CK levels, the amount of muscle breakdown in your urine.
Okay.
So I was being tested, every other day training, and I couldn't get it to trigger. So I just pushed as hard as possibly could for those times, and I couldn't. And then I started calling teams, and originally teams were a little apprehensive about it, saying, well, you don't want to get hurt. And, it's been 8 years, and then it got a little more serious, and guys were asking me where I was training. And actually, Elliot Friedman did me a big favor and put it on Hockey Night in Canada that I was looking for a team to come back, and then finally got some traction. So it was nice. And I really just reached out to Terry Crisp, who's probably the best guy to talk to. He's won the Stanley Cup. I think he's the only person who won the Stanley Cup as a player, coach, and as an executive. So he was in Nashville, and I just asked him what he would do if he was in my situation. And he said, I would just advocate for yourself and go to one of these places. They don't sign me. I'll pay for everything on my own. I'll go to get the hotel. I'll skate on my own. You can watch me. If you think it's safe for me to go into the practice, then I'll join the practice. And then from there, if you think it's good enough for me to get a game, I'll try a game. And that's what I did. So Scott Walker and in Nashville, and the Predators gave me a chance. Trots, they allowed me to sign a PTO with them, and to their credit, I thought after the first, I didn't play contact hockey in 8 years. I broke my rib the first game.
Oh,
so
no.
I was still playing with men's league gear. Played one period, and then got hit with some suspenders that had like a metal buckle on it. So went right into the rib, broke the rib. I tried playing the rest of the game. Did played the next game, and then I thought, guys, I got to go check this out. So I went to the hospital, and sure enough, it was broken. So I thought, you know, that was it. That was nice of them to do that. So
yeah.
Nice of them to, you know, send me the charity. You know, the PTO, they can release you for any reason. So
yeah,
I thought that was going to be it. But they were amazing. They said, you know, we just got a guy called in the NHL. He's got a place available when you come back. You know, make sure you know, stay in good shape, all that stuff. But when you come back, we got a place for you to stay. So came back, and then, yeah, I did pretty well. I like to 6 goals in 5 games at that point, and was part of a team that went on I think we were a 19 game winning streak, was second all time in the AHL history, and just a lot of fun to be back in the room and back around the guys, and I loved it. It was really nice.
Okay, it's a lot to unpack. So when you're so the 5 years, equipment in the closet, JP Dumont calls you, come for a random skate, you go skate. And then you start to, you know, this is fun. Let's do this a little more. And are you basically testing it on your own? Because you, like you said, you know the triggers. Or are you consulting with doctors and specialists? Because this is your life you're playing with. Are you just going, I'm going to skate for a little bit and see how it goes, push myself a little more? How does that scenario go?
So they have drugs called dantrolene. It's basically a muscle relaxer. So the issue with me is the calcium builds up. And then it doesn't release. So your muscles get tighter. Like when you flex, calcium goes in your muscle. And then when you release the flex, the calcium leaves. People with MH, once it's triggered, basically the calcium just builds up and builds up and builds up until you get tighter and tighter and tighter. And then you overheat. Yeah, you tear and you have all these other issues from internal heating. So I take these dantrolene pills. And the problem is they make you loopy and slow. Like if I was to play pickleball on it, the ball goes by and then you swing at it. You're super delayed. So it's really dangerous to play hockey on it.
Yeah.
So I knew I could never come back and play real hockey on it. So I just, you know, would have some fun with the guys once a week. And, you know, it's more about, you know, this, it's more about just getting together with the guys and
exactly
like,
yeah,
that part of the game. That's what everyone really misses. So it was just nice, good for the soul that way to be around everybody and chatting, talking hockey. So that's what really got me back into playing. But the competitive side of it, there was no chance I was going to do that unless I found ways to really oxidize my muscles and allow my muscles to work properly without the drugs.
So you were like, honestly, like a guinea pig, because you're seeing these improvements, and I'm guessing they haven't really done a testing on a professional athlete to these levels. So were they amazed at your progress and the end result? Because
yeah,
I'm
still doing tests and things for them. Like I'm still on panels and answering questions of people from all over the world, people from Australia, Switzerland. I still get called. I got a text this morning asking someone that it used to be a marathon runner. They had a reaction and now they can't do anything. They're wondering what they can do to kind of help out. So yeah, lots of people, even people around the league that have family members with malignant hypothermia, they've all kind of reached out and asked what they can do and try to help. So I'm just basically an advocate for the RYR1 Foundation. They were really kind to me and nice to me and gave me a bunch of resources when I had to stop playing. And now I feel like I can help out other people that are going through rough times. So, I mean, it's tough when it happens to you, but I'm glad I can, you know, have a bit of a platform to be able to help other people too.
You're making a difference in a very big way, because it seems like this is a very unknown, but it affects a lot of people, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, the numbers even are low, but I think it's 1 in 10,000 or something like that.
That's a lot.
And you never really know as well, because it's basically a threshold. Like I didn't know growing up, it really had an issue other than that. Just had to tell doctors that, or the team doctors. And even, you know, while playing pro, I would say that I have malignant hypothermia. I just have to watch out if I get anesthesia. There's not many people that know, like there's a certain threshold when you hit athletically or when you're exertionally that this could trigger on its own. So, I just kind of help people with that too.
Ah, fascinating, fascinating stuff. All right. That's all I want to talk about that. Cause I could go on. Like, I think it's an incredible story. It honestly is incredible. And then to come back and play, and then you played great when you were with Milwaukee. Why did you stop playing? What happened with that season? Cause you only played 13 games and they obviously went to the playoffs.
And then, yeah, no, I felt amazing. There was a day that we had a day off. I was in San Diego. We're on the beach with the guys, and I could feel everything just tighten again. And then I played one more game, and I knew it was toast. So I tore my back. I knew I had to stop, and it was unfortunate because I tried one more time. I took 3 weeks off, came back, but if I couldn't, be on the beach with the guys and have it, not get exertionally, triggered, then I knew I couldn't professionally. I want to go back and play in the NHL too. That was my goal. So I wasn't coming back to, play in Europe or to play other places. I wanted to just come back and see if I could still play at the highest level. And if it was just home games, I had team doctors around me or something like that. But that's not the pro game. It's a tough game, and you got to respect the players that are out there. So I knew, I think the last game I was in Rockford and I was playing with a teammate, and we were getting lots of chances, but I could just feel everything tighten up, and then I'd take a little more of the drugs and a little more of the drugs. And then at that point it becomes dangerous out there, because there's guys that they can kill you when they hit you. So I knew it was over, but I'm glad I tried. That was the main thing for me. I'm glad that at least I know that I can do everything. If I do the cold and the breathing and take some of the dancing if I need to, I'm fine. I can literally do anything. I can run. I do Pilates all the time. I play pickleball, tennis, paddle. I can be out in the heat. I do everything. So I'm really glad that I came back, because it showed me that I don't need to be scared. I don't need to be worried about not, just kind of having to stay inside and do nothing all day. So now I got my life back.
Do you want to know the embarrassing thing? For me, you scored more goals when you were with Milwaukee for those 13 games than I did in my whole AHL career. In a college,
we had different roles.
Oh, I know, but it is quite humbling for me that you're doing this and you haven't played in 8 years and you're dealing with this medical issue, trying to work your way through it, and you're still just like dominating.
I remember we had a 2-on-1 and it was one of the shifts that we got put on together. And I think we played a few games maybe together too, but some tough years in Buffalo, messing lines around.
Not
we
good.
Had a 2-on-1 and you were going back door. I passed you back post, and you're like, "What are you doing?" Like, why are you passing me? It's like, the goalie doesn't think you're passing the defense. No one thinks you're passing me.
Did I bury
you
it?
You had a wide open net. You didn't bury it.
Damn it. I had a wide open net too. Whatever. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back then and let's go talk about your hockey career, because I want to know about Vancouver, because Vancouver, a pressure packed city when you were there. They like, that's when they were competing for Stanley Cups. Like, they're a great team.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you were dominant when you were there. Talk about the Sedins, talk about that culture, because you were there for such a short period of time, but you had insane success. Like, you scored some big goals with the Vancouver.
Oh yeah.
What's that like going into that environment when you're walking into an environment, it's like win the Stanley Cup or it's a failed season?
Oh yeah, I loved it. I liked the pressure. You know, some guys would rather not play in the Canadian market and kind of have, be able to go for dinners and walk on the beach and no one bother them. But I enjoy it when every game means something. So, getting geared up for every game was awesome. I really enjoyed it. And also playing with the top players in the world, like learning from the Daniel and Henrik and seeing how they manipulate the game so well. They can almost play in rubber boots. Like, they can throw the puck around to relieve pressure, pick a puck off the wall and backhand sauce to a guy in the slot. Like,
yeah.
Most guys are just trying to stab at the puck to knock the puck down. It comes around the wall, right? Like, similar to what guys are talking about Kucherov does now, where he does so many rim plays, throws around the ball. But the Sedins were doing that for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they can control the puck off the wall so easily. And they talk every single shift. I mean, they played together as kids all the way up, the same line, same team, everything, juniors, and then the NHL too. So, and they still talked between every shift. So they knew where each other were going to be no matter what situation was coming on. So it was just incredible to watch. It wasn't telepathy like a lot of people think. So it was them breaking the game down, slowing it down, and they could play. I think I've had two shifts with them. And I got an apple. So it was a lot of fun to play in that group.
And then you get traded. You've been there, what, a year, really? Because you played eight games your first year in pro hockey. What happened? Because like, they invested a bunch in you. You're, top 10 pick. Did you see – you were having a good year, Cody. It's not like you were having a bad year.
Yeah,
I
think I just won the rookie of the month that month. That was one of the best plus-minus everything. So, yeah, I thought things were rolling, going to playoffs. But they kept telling me they wanted, like, a big, strong third-line center. Like, in the media, everything, the papers, they're all talking about this. I was playing, like, 8 minutes a night. I wasn't playing a whole lot. I knew the year before I was playing up to the deadline, and then they brought in a third line center, and then I was sent to the minors. So that year I was like, hey, if you're going to, just want a third line. I wasn't going to play fourth line. Manny Malhotra was fourth line. He's great on faceoff, great on PK. Wasn't my position. So it was either like play or go to the minors. So I just said, listen, if you guys are serious about bringing this third line center in, I'll be the piece that goes the other way. Let me have an opportunity. If you're gonna bring in a third line center to take my position, don't send me to the minors, right? And like, oh no, we'll never trade you, that kind of stuff. And then the day of the trade, I was walking back with it was Tanev and I. We're walking back in Phoenix. We're walking together, and then he gets a call. Like, I think the trade deadline was over at 2:00. He gets a call like 2:15. And he's like, Cody to Buffalo? What? And, you know, we kind of look at each other and we start laughing. Like, this guy is trying to prank us, but, you know, it's already past the deadline. You're pretty slow for that. And then I got a call. It was Bob McKenzie. It's like, Cody, how do you feel about the trade to Buffalo? And I said, hold on one second. Let me talk to my agent here.
Yeah.
And I couldn't make an outgoing call for 8 hours. Like, my phone just kept blowing up. They'd given my number to every official media person. Didn't tell me. Didn't let me know ahead of time. So I had to wait for my parents to call to answer the phone, or wait for my agent to call, and then I would answer the phone, because I couldn't. By the time I was dialing, there were so many media people calling, I literally couldn't make an outgoing call.
No way. So okay. Yeah, you're what? A 20-year-old kid at this point, and you... Yeah. 21. And you go in. Who's the GM at this point?
I was Gillis, yeah.
So you tell Gillis, if you're not going to play me and you're going to send me down, you should trade me, use me as a piece. You're telling me you told that as a 20-year-old kid?
Yeah, I just, because everyone thinks it was Cassian that the deal was for, but really Paulson came in and played my position at third line there.
Yeah.
They want Cassian as like a toughness grit third line winger or fourth line guy, but the guys that they brought in were two guys. It was Paulson and I think it was Samuelson too, that came in and played my position. So I knew I wasn't going to play.
Samuel Paulson comes over from Anaheim or Columbus, I mean. Yeah. And kidding. So you're getting all these calls. At what point does Gillis, do you get a chance to talk to him and say, what the hell? You told me I wasn't going anywhere. And all of a sudden,
I didn't talk to them. I was just dealt. And I got talked with Buffalo, and I coordinated with Buffalo. I had to fly back, do a physical in Buffalo, and then meet the team in Anaheim. So I went from Phoenix to Buffalo to Anaheim all in one day with all my stuff. And then we played in Vancouver like a couple weeks after that, so I could go and grab a lot more of my stuff coming back to Buffalo. But for the most part, yeah, I stayed in the hotel and finished out the rest of the season on the road, basically. I actually said it's my one NHL record. I have the most away games in NHL history in one season. I think I got like 48.
No kidding.
I was traded in the middle of a massive road trip.
Oh, my gosh. And you go to a Buffalo team that's really good, too, or has some, you know, potential. But
Yeah. We got traded from the trade deadline. We were the best team in the league at that point on. We missed the playoffs by 1 point, unfortunately.
But
we were rolling.
How is that for you? Because did you get a chance with Buffalo right away? Are you playing with Pominville and Stafford and Vanek and Derek Roy? Like, they had a lot of good players, Cody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. Right away, I got dealt there. I played with staff like my first game, I think, within Anaheim. And then, I got put on power play with Derek Roy and Vanek. And Lindy had a ton of confidence in me right away. It was refreshing. You know, it was nice to get a regular shift and be able to play consistently. So it was a huge change. But I loved it. It was up-tempo practices. And Lindy was hard, but he was fair. I really enjoyed playing for him.
And then the next year, obviously the lockout, and then you meet me, and my beautiful presence graces your hockey life. And the Buffalo Sabres, we were Stanley Cup contenders coming into that season. Like, the roster that we had was a dangerous roster. We had Ryan Miller between the pipes. You know, I mentioned Vanek. We had Robin Regier and Jordan Leopold on the back. Like, we had a great team. And then it just fell apart. And it was literally like, who's who? Who's leaving this week? Who's getting traded? Because the way the lockout worked, you pretty much had to win the first 10 games were huge. And I think we started this season 0-7 and 3 or something. Like, we were garbage the first 10 games of the season. What was...
Yeah.
Talk about that, Cody. Talk about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it started in the offseason, actually, because they traded Derek Roy. So I was playing behind Roysey when I first came in. I thought that's a great guy to learn from. I actually, you know, we still skate together every Wednesday with Gary Roberts. And
It's a good group up here, but yeah, it's an awesome guy to learn from. Super fast, super skilled, great with the puck. So I thought it would be a really nice guy to play behind, and then they dealt him. So now I was first line center coming into the year. So they had enough confidence in me to be able to deal with someone like that. I thought that's a nice, you know, confidence boost from that side of it. But it would have been nice to have an extra piece with Roizy, but I know the way, you know, free agency works, stuff like that. A lot of them were up around that same time. So we needed to win right away, or they were going to start dismantling the team because they can get some assets in return. They didn't want to have the same situation happen with Briere and Drury years prior. So, no, I have a lot of respect for Darcy Regier and Lindy and the way they handled it. Our line with Palmer, Vanek, and I think we were top 10 in scoring, the three of us, right at the beginning of the year. It might have been a month or two of that, and then it just kind of, like you said, the wheels fell off, and we started dealing everybody. And I mean, I don't think it was this year, but we traded Ryan Miller like 5 minutes before the game.
Yeah,
we had the accountant up before they had made the rule change with the backup goalies had to be like a certain caliber. We had our accountant come in. he was scared. He wouldn't go in the net, so he wouldn't even take warm up with us. And then I'm sure, you know, of course, Enroth gets run over, so he's hurt. And we're like, we don't have anybody. The goalie wouldn't even put his helmet on to go on the bench. So trainers go out, and they wheel him off the ice. They're carrying him off the ice with another player. And then our coach goes, you got to go back in the net. So there's no backup. So
yeah.
They wheel him back in the net, and they place him in the net. It's like men's league or something. You know?
We were such a dysfunctional team from everywhere. Crazy. If you look at the roster, typically a team will have like 30 guys that play a game for him in the season. If you go to Hockey DB to the 13-14 Buffalo Sabres, there's 50 guys that played for us during that season. There's six goaltenders like Connor Knapp, Matt Hackett, you know, there was some random guys that played, but through it all, Cody, you had your best season that year. Like you put up almost a point, like 44 points. That was your led the team in scoring. You had a great season. The year before you had a great season. You must have thought the sky's the limit. You go to Buffalo, they put you first line. Things were going great. We're losing, but you're playing great hockey. How happy are you feeling during these times? And you signed a big deal to stay in Buffalo too.
Yeah, I signed a long-term deal, actually, which was a little bit rare. I owe a lot, actually, to Thomas Vanek because, you know, he signed, obviously, a big deal, and they wanted him to stay. They wanted him to extend.
Yeah.
And he basically said he really enjoyed playing with me, and I'll need to sign Cody to a long-term deal, then he'll consider signing a deal. So I actually owe a lot to Van because most teams to give a 22-year-old long-term is kind of unheard of at that point. They just did these little bridge deals for 2 years.
Yeah.
But I was fortunate to get a long-term at a higher deal. So it worked out really well for me from a financial point of view, but that's not really the way I operate. You know, you go to the rink and you want to feel good and you want to be able to talk with the guys and it sucks when you lose. Like you can't say anything, you can't do anything, you can't do any fun things, but you know, there's so many guys you learn from that are looking back that are older. Like Robin Regier was a great example, the guy you brought. Like he would organize things for the team. There's reasons that he played on good teams and teams went far, and he's a great teammate and Stanley Cups, but like him and his wife would organize like a amazing race type style. So we got to kick a field goal at the Bill Stadium, got to meet the mayor, eat a chicken wing at the first chicken wing anchor bar. Like that kind of stuff really brings a team together. So now you learn a lot of lessons even in losing years, but for the most part that was pretty tough. Just going through, like you talk about the amount of goalies that we went through alone was pretty crazy.
That event was cool. I was a part of that. And so Robin and his wife, Christina, she like got all these different businesses in Buffalo to do these cool things. So you would do it. Remember you do a rap song, and that's when Macklemore was really popular. So you do like a rap song.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you went to a gun range at the police station and you shoot guns. And the whole time you're just, well, I was drinking. I know you don't drink, but I was like, it was so incredibly fun, and everybody has their teams, but it was those moments because the season can get long, and gosh, we were so bad, but we had guys who were really good at just taking the edge off. And I think Robin was a good guy for that, but like Steve Ott and these guys who were just super good Steve pros, but just, it was not a good situation to be in. And now Buffalo, what do you think of the Sabres now, Cody? Cause you're obviously still working with them. You do not working with them, but you do a lot with the Sabres. you must feel for guys like Tage Thompson and Rasmus Dahlin, because you were a top guy. You had to have all the blame thrust upon you when all the big guys were gone. Everybody's looking at Cody Hodgson. What's wrong with this team? What do the Sabres need to do to kind of turn the corner?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I know I still got a lot of faith in Lindy. I think he's a great coach, but I feel like it's tough commenting when you're on the outside. I know it's a horrible answer what you want to hear, but like for me to try to say something on the outside without knowing what's actually going on, it's tough. I see a ton of skill there. I see the development of these young guys that are, they're not as young as you'd think anymore. They got a ton of talent and potential, but they got to transfer that at some point into dominating games. So you can see it. They have flashes of it. And that's probably the most frustrating part. I know now I'm volunteer coaching these kids that are, they're 14 turning 15. And when you're on the other side coaching, it's a little different when you look at the game overall. So I really enjoyed playing for Lindy. He was my favorite coach to play for in the NHL.
No kidding.
But yeah, at some point you like all the coaches that play. That's kind of the way it works, right? Like,
yeah, I guess so. And he was good because he played me. I got to play with you. That's my claim to fame.
Yeah, no, I thought Lindy was really smart. Yeah, really, really good. Been around a long time, played the game, just understood a lot of the concepts. So, I mean, I got nothing but good things to say about Lindy. Hopefully they can turn things around there. But yeah. We got some crazy. And then you start thinking about like peripheral things. Remember, we'd have like, at this point, I think it was that disaster of a year. We had like a team party right before playing teams in Nashville. We had like the recording studio rented out with all the musicians coming before night before a game. And
you just get buckled.
Was that the night? Was that the night when we got back and you flew by Tim Murray? Remember that? And Tim came in the next day. I was like, "Who's got the Range Rover from Minnesota place?"
Yeah, I was like,
and we blamed Stafford.
Yeah,
You got pulled over after that, flying home past everybody.
Yeah, he's like, who's driving the Range Rover with Minnesota plates? I don't know. Drew Stafford, probably. Maybe it was his wife. I don't know. But Tim Murray, probably, and I know you don't like speaking ill of people, but I will for you. Worst GM I've ever played for. Absolutely atrocious. Just like, oh, my goodness. The Buffalo Sabres know how to pick them, but – anyways.
Oh yeah, just rough years overall. But I remember, just fun. so many things.
You got to be a captain. Cody was a captain during preseason. He had to maneuver some things. You were such a good leader at such a young age. You could tell that you had greatness ahead of you, Cody. And now you're proving me right.
Yeah, that game in particular, I remember because it was infamous. I get asked about it all the time when you do these celebrity charity events and you go and you tell stories. And one of my favorite ones is to tell the John Scott, Phil Kessel story.
Mm-hmm.
But I have it from a different perspective. But I love hearing your take on that, why you challenged Phil. And
because somebody beat up Corey Trop. And everybody loved Corey Trop, this little kind of pit bull. And somebody beat him up. And so... whatever. And I didn't realize you were the captain. So you had to deal with the melee, talking to the refs, trying to work out the penalties. Cause it was literally a 6-on-6 fight. Everybody was going at it. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, no one actually thought you were serious. Even Phil didn't think you're serious about it. You dropped your gloves and everything, we just all hell broke loose and guys jumped on you. You're sitting on this massive pile. You get speared, you get slashed, you get tomahawked, and then you get thrown out of the game. So I was just asking the ref, like, what is this work? You know?
But
like,
imagine
John Scott, right?
If he would have given me 2 minutes and I was just sitting in the box and everybody else had gotten kicked out, how funny would that have been? That would have been a dream. If I would have had a better captain, maybe he would have gone to bat for me a little bit more.
I didn't advocate hard enough for you, obviously.
All right, one last thing and I'll let you go. You talk about developing. You talk about, working with the 14 and 15-year-olds. I found it interesting. We were in Toronto. It was like the Austin Matthews charity game or whatever. And you were there. Gary Roberts was there. Chris Tanev was there. There's a bunch of heavy hitters. I didn't realize that you had been somewhat working with Gary Roberts because as a pro, when I was training, I was so behind the times. I would do it by myself, Cody, here in Traverse City, Michigan. I'd have the little book and I'd do my workouts and check, check, check. You dreamed of training with Gary Roberts. Like that was the top of the mountain, right? Like he's working with Stamkos and McDavid and all of these heavy hitters. I would have paid thousands to work with him. and he still wouldn't have let me because he's very selective. You were working with him last year, so you're around all these top guys. How cool was that for you? Because you obviously pride yourself in your physical strength. You're an Adonis. If you want to see Cody, go to his Instagram page. He's got plenty of pictures of him shirtless. It's an amazing physique. Like, it's absolutely amazing. So I know you take care of yourself, but
I hope people, I'm private, but I hope people realize you're joking on this, but
are you private?
I appreciate the comment.
Yeah. I will post a picture of Cody shirtless after this. So everybody can see what I'm talking about. Cause it's an amazing thing. Look at his bulging biceps. What was it like working with Gary? Because he's obviously strict. Like, he's got a regimen up at 4,
yeah,
probably
Gary's the man.
All these things. So how, walk us through that, because that's rarefied air you're dealing with there, Cody.
Yeah, no, I was very fortunate. When I played, I got hooked up. I grew up playing with Steven Stamkos, and then Steven, obviously, it's a famous story. When he got with Tampa, he got hooked up with Gary, and then Gary trained him through his whole career now. So I was friends with Steven, and I went and trained with him that second summer. So the first season was just Steven and him, and then the second one was Gauntz, myself, Weiss, Skinner, all local, basically Markham, York region guys. So went over to his house in the side wing there with him and the kids and his wife, Michelle. And
no way.
I got to have this amazing, amazing experience working with them. So my first year, I was hurt for a lot of it, and he actually paid out of pocket his own money to hire specialists that could work with someone that had my problems. So I owe a lot to Gary, and he stuck up for me and things like that when, you know, people were questioning my character. And, you know, he's always been in my corner. So I was happy to help him out. He's got this new facility up in Vaughan that's state of the art. He's got, you know, two ice pads. He's got an eatery. He's got two gyms. He's got the full court turf. So the guy, it's incredible. So he asked if I would help him out to do some of the on ice and train those guys. So I was fortunate to do it. It's a lot of fun. The energy level when those guys are on the ice, it's, you know, like I said, I work with the 14, 15 year olds now, and it's fun to be on the ice with them. And then when you get to this pro level, you can just see the gap that those guys need to get to, because it's pretty tough. These are the top guys in the world. Yeah, it wasn't just, you know, McDavid, Drysdale, a lot of the Edmonton guys. You got Robert Thomas and Byfield and, you know, both Tanevs. It's just a whole roster. I think it had 39 pro guys. So
crazy.
Try to design drills and keep things interesting for them. It's a lot. It's a big project, but I'm glad I was part of it. It's a lot of fun. And yeah, it is a big commitment. Gary runs a tight ship, and it's top of the line. So
to be
involved with that was really an honor. Yeah.
What do you do? Like, cause obviously you're the coach and your job is to, you know, challenge these guys and push them and make them better. How do you make McDavid better? Honestly, what drills do you do for him? Because it seems like he's just, like, he's so good.
Well, Connor's amazing. Connor's happy to do what drills you design with the group. Like, okay. he's not trying to dominate the drills. Say, we got to do this, we got to do that. And, you know, I would ask every day. We'd ask these guys what they want to work on and how they want to do it, and just take their feedback. Try to incorporate everybody, because there's a wide spectrum of players out there. You got defensive defensemen with, you know, offensive skilled, you know, forwards. So you try to design it basically in phases, how it starts off at the beginning of the year. It's a little bit, you know, most guys are working on the same type of thing. And then you transition it to right before games. You're looking at the most competitive type hockey, that just, you try to have it so that guys are ready to go for training camp. That's basically our philosophy on it, was try to build, you know, as a progression. It's not just work on the same drills all the way over and over again. So
how are those?
Hopefully they liked it and they want to come back next year.
How are those scrimmages? Because a lot of summer hockey is just, you know, let's just scrimmage, throw a puck out and have some. Like, the talent is incredible. It's better than an all-star game. Would you take part in it, Cody?
Well, that's something that you would do too, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you go back home and skate in the Beauty League in Minnesota too?
Oh, yeah.
Similar idea, right? You get a bunch of guys that all go pool together, because they know that the best way to get better is the competition. Competition and coaching is how guys get better. So they know that. They seek it out. They pay a lot of money to go to these training facilities, and it's an investment for them. So yeah, I think it, you know, I did it as a player, and I hopefully can add some value for these guys as well.
Who do you think the best player in the league is right now?
I mean, it's tough to argue against Connor, especially when he gets ramping up. Like,
yeah,
it's pretty unbelievable. I played a couple games with his men's league team this year. It was a lot of fun. He has just a bunch of buddies that he plays.
Oh,
that,
really?
You know, they played recreational hockey with when he was younger, and then he puts them in this men's league, and they ended up going to the final. They were in the final, I think, 6 of the 11 years or something, which is pretty incredible. Like, there's all good players. It's not just other men's league to come in and play. There's, you know, the Byfields come and play. Guys from all over the world come in and they play in this Aurora men's league so that they can play against the best player in the world.
No
so
way.
It's great training for them. And Connor's not having a stacked like team around him. He just brings his buddies, right? And he gets in the final every year, but he never won. And this year they asked me to play in a game with him. So Leon and I filled in for the final and we actually won.
Yeah, your life is so bizarre. Do you realize how crazy, like, Cody, you're getting asked by Connor McDavid to go and play in his men's league. Do you ever just sit there and go, holy hell, like, I'm playing with the two best players on the planet? And, like, that's pretty wild, man.
Yeah, I mean, they make the game look so easy. It's pretty incredible. Gosh. I mean, it's just fun. Even just the energy level. I think a lot of people understand Connor's skill. Like, you work on your skill. There's you just the next echelon. You get bigger, stronger, faster.
Yeah.
You can work on more time. But his energy level is the stuff that I'm blown away by. Like, he's ready to go before anybody else. He's ready to skate. He's warmed up. He's like, in the gym early. He's on the ice early. And then when he touches the ice, he's going three times as fast as everyone else. Even just doing, like, the Indy 500 where people are, you know, talking and for the game. He's like, to skate and chat with Connor, you have to physically skate.
No way.
Especially me with my inefficient stride.
It's not very good. I know. Like, I didn't want to bring it up. So is he just a specimen? Because when you see him, he just looks like, you know, he doesn't look like this physical specimen. Is he jacked?
Yeah, no, he's jacked. I mean, from the time that he started training with us when he was 16.
Yeah.
So we get to see him all the way up progress. And he wasn't ever this behemoth strength-wise, but he is now. He's very strong in all aspects. It's really impressive to see.
Man.
Not just on off the ice, but on the ice too.
Like,
it's noticeably a gap. Like, he's, and I'm not just talking about the other guys in the ice. Like, these are the top guys in the world. But
yeah,
it's just fun to see the energy level that they bring.
Yeah, I played with you. Remember Antoine Vermette, a great NHL player, super faceoff guy. I remember his legs were just, he was just stronger than everybody. Like, by far, it wasn't even close. And he was just physically a freak of nature when it comes to his leg strength, and his face-offs were incredible. So it makes sense that Connor's strong because he's so good, like, so incredible.
But he's worked at it. He worked at it. It didn't come natural to him is what I was trying to say.
Yeah, no, I believe it. And you're a part of that.
Strength part.
You're part of that.
Well, I don't know if I'm part of that. That's internal. That's not me lifting the weights for him. That's a lot of that stuff is all internally driven. He'll rent ice in the middle of the summer and go skate with a goalie that we have. Like, he'll employ a goalie to go skate on his own too.
No kidding.
Like, that's the level of dedication. Like, I was making 14 whatever million, recently married, middle of summer.
Yeah.
Just skated, and then you're gonna skate again in the afternoon. I don't know. I can think of a few other things that I'd be doing, but that's why Connor's who he is, and I'm retired. So,
buddy, I won't even spend money to buy, like, I won't even buy Subway nowadays because I feel like I'm getting ripped off because the $5 footlong is $7 now. I'm like, no, the rip. I'm not doing that.
That's why it's nice to the alumni event. They take care of that. They fly in, they pay for your meals. So those are nice. We got to do some more of those, buddy. We get to see you in person again.
Sounds like I need to make a call because you're doing all the fun stuff and I get stuck with the junk. Nothing fun. But anyways, I'll leave it at that, Cody. Always a pleasure, my friend. Like, you're one of the best guys out there. If you want to be a nice guy, just call up Cody and he will answer. That's the type of guy he is. But I appreciate you joining me, Cody. I'll see you around sometime. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Cheers.